Just your friendly disclaimer here, so we don't get sued. Socialism in the Dirty South is made by Atlanta DSA members, but the statements and comments do not reflect the chapter as a whole. Now sit back and enjoy.
We can have a safe word too. Like, if you're ever like, shit, I'm in a hole and I don't know what to say next, or you need like to drink some water, or you just need a moment to regain your thoughts, we can have a safe word for it. Like, cucumber or something.
What about Fidelio?
No one will
get it.
What the fuck does that mean?
It's from Eyes Wide Shut. It was the password to get into the orgy.
Oh my god. You know, I've never seen that movie.
Don't.
And welcome to Socialism in the Dirty South. I am your host, Eileen. Today we are talking about socialism during the holiday season. My guest today has recently written a piece on Medium titled, Why Christmas Should Make You Think of Socialism. Thank you, John, for joining me today. And to the people listening, yes, right now for us it is the holiday season, but for you it is the future. And I hope in the future it is not as cold and not as pandemic ridden. That being said, what is the future like? Let me know at podcastlaborstories@atldsa.org. Hi, John.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yes, thank you so much for being here. So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about your Medium post that you wrote. It was beautifully written and it kind of spoke to me, and I was like, I kind of wanted this guy to be on the podcast. He sounds smart. Tell me a little bit why you wanted to write this post, and what inspired you to write this post?
So basically, I was asked to do a newsletter, and it could be about anything, but it kind of made sense to do something around Christmas. And I actually was pretty much going to spend all of my time doing research on, like, how much charity and philanthropy affects people during the holiday season versus like on a day-to-day basis, and how much does it really cost to increase charity and philanthropy, and is it worth it to do that? And oddly enough, someone that was helping me with the project asked if I include something about the Muppets Christmas Carol, and as like a joke, right? And I was like, no, that's great. And it actually made me think about Charles Dickens, because that's you know, A Christmas Carol is the famous story about Ebenezer Scrooge and Tiny Tim, and it's all about wealth disparity. Mm-hmm. And I thought that actually makes a lot more sense to talk about that than it would, you know, to talk about the economy, because in the spirit of Christmas, you know, I feel like we've gotten away. First off, I'm not religious, so I mean, like, the traditional spirit of Christmas, right? I think that we've gotten away from that to like a consumer-driven Christmas, and there's a lot of tradition and mythology that's actually rooted in economic class struggle. Mm-hmm. And I thought that would be a little bit more fun to talk about. So that's kind of, that was where the inspiration came from, was somebody, Chelsea, actually, I don't know if I should use their name, but Chelsea, props, that was a really, really fun idea. And that's where this came from.
Yeah, Chelsea's awesome. I love Chelsea. I've actually had her on the podcast before. So yeah, Chelsea's great.
Cool.
Yeah, so a couple quotes that really spoke to me, and this, so one in particular is the one about Bill Gates, and I'm just going to go ahead and read it real quickly for the listeners. Bill Gates famously gives most of his wealth away to worthwhile causes, and while this is a moral gesture, there are justified criticism that in his doing so, Gates is slowing progress by helping a dying system show signs of life and using philanthropy as a band-aid on a severed leg. beautifully written. So in the past with like coworkers and friends and stuff, I've had people say, God, Bill Gates is great. He gives, you know, so much of his wealth away to worthwhile causes and charities. And it never quite sat right with me when they said that and how much they're praising this, you know, multi-billionaire or not. Well, I think now he's a billionaire anyway. whatever. Rich fucking man.
Yeah.
And so it never really quite sat right with me. And then by reading that quote, I was like, God, that's it. That's it. That's totally it. He's just, he's feeding a dying system that keeps fucking with people's lives and giving money to capitalistic society that only creates more problems for the poor and the working class.
He's making sure that he'll never put himself out of the job. If the job is philanthropy, then, you know, you're never going to solve the need for philanthropy in the first place with a capitalistic system that really relies on do-gooders, right? So, I mean, you can be a morally just person here, and I think that Bill Gates is collecting some positive karma, for lack of a better term.
Yes.
But at the end of the day, you have to look at the outcomes, and you know, you can have the best intentions and still make poor decisions. Mm-hmm. And this is one of those cases where, you know, this is a symptom of a problem. It's not the solution. So, and by the way, actually, Bill Gates is fully aware of this. He's actually his own harshest critic in a lot of ways. If you look at some of the quotes that he said, he recognizes that he's putting a Band-Aid on a severed leg.
Interesting.
He's just also so entrenched in the belief that capitalism is the way, or at least publicly he says that the lens through which he sees charity is just different than mine. And it's really hard to like come to terms. I pulled up a quote from him that I thought was, it's an interesting thing. If we believe it to be 100% genuine, which part of me questions in a lot of the same way that like Stephen Hawking never came out as an atheist until like very late in life. Mm. But that was, it would have ruined his career, a lot of people said. It would have made him a less powerful person in society. And I'm wondering if Bill Gates fully believes in capitalism the way that he seems to, or if it's just good for business, right? But here's the quote. He said, as I see it, there are two great forces of human nature, self-interest and caring for others. That seems accurate. Mm. Capitalism harnesses self-interest in a helpful and sustainable way, but only on behalf of those who can pay. Government aid and philanthropy channel our caring for those who can't pay. But to provide rapid improvement for the poor, we need a system that draws in innovators and businesses in a far better way than we do today, end quote. So he's not even, while he's aware of the problems, he's not even open to the idea of a solution which would change the current structure of the institution.
Right. It sounds like he might be a little curious. I mean, but at the same time, it doesn't really give any other, like you said, solutions or options or anything else. It's just, that's it. It's what we live in. This is what it is. And there's no other way.
Yeah. It's, I mean, to use the Marx classic metaphor of derailing the train, right? Then, I mean, he's not leaving that as an option. He's like, okay, so we're on this train and we want to go to Los Angeles, but the train doesn't have tracks there. So even though we're in San Jose, we're going to get in this train that is on its way to Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could be on its way to New York, but we want to go to LA, right? And this dude is saying that the only two possible options are to ride this train down those tracks that are further away than the place that we want to go. when we could just derail the damn train and build a new track. Yeah. Right? I mean, it's completely illogical thinking.
Yeah. But and also another thing is, like, why do we keep having to rely on the billionaire class to give? You know, like, it doesn't make sense. And, you know, we're at the mercy of the rich, and this shouldn't be like that.
Well, I mean, I think that the answer to that question is because it's more profitable for those people who are in the top 10%, right?
Oh, for sure.
I mean, like, if in a very literal term, we could just talk about interest, right? I mean, you're going to collect more interest and therefore make more money if you withhold somebody's, you know, if you withhold as much of their pay till the end of the year as you possibly can, i.e. Christmas bonuses and shit like that.
Right.
Right. There's, if you know any teachers, at least down in Florida where I grew up, I'm not really from Atlanta. Like, I moved here a few years ago, but, most teachers that I know, they have like a salary deal, and it kind of works out where, like, you can get your salary dispersed throughout the year evenly, or you can get, like, basically it in two chunks. And all of the math teachers get it in two chunks, and all of the English teachers don't. And it's funny. It's a joke. It's not really true, right? But it's the idea here, the joke, is that the math teachers understand the value of interest, right? And if you have interest and responsible spending, then you're actually going to take home more at the end of the year than you would if you had it spread out evenly throughout the year.
Yeah.
But what they don't have offered is get all your pay at the end of the year. And the reason why they wouldn't do that is because that would be the worst way for you to try to increase your take home.
Right.
Or your bottom line. That would be, you're collecting zero interest all year.
Yeah.
So in a very literal sense, if they just want to be as cutthroat about everything as possible, the reason why, you know, people don't want to give you a livable wage and instead want to give you an end of the year bonus is because it makes more money for them.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't even have to be coming from a heartless place. You know, people can literally think, oh, well, at the end of the day, my employee is going to make the same amount of money, right? If it all balances out, then I guess if you don't include interest, it's not going to change the labor budget. So why would they think of it that way?
Right.
But for you, you're actually feeling that, right? You're the person that's not collecting the interest. And meanwhile, they are. So yeah, it sucks, but I mean, that pretty much the answer to everything is because money.
Real quick, where did you live in Florida?
I went to school in Gainesville.
And, okay.
I also lived in Tampa and Sarasota as well.
Oh, okay, cool. I used to live in Boca.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I went to school around there.
I knew somebody who was from a place called Punta Gorda. And it's called, it's like Fat Point or something like that. And if you look at it on a map, it totally looks like a dong. And it's like, it's perfectly named. It's so funny.
Amazing. I mean, well, yeah. Florida basically is one giant dong, so.
Yeah, well, I mean, literally, yeah.
Literally, yeah. So another quote that, and this is the quote that really kind of made me want you, wanted me to have you on the podcast was, "This gift-giving season, I will remember that bonuses do not replace a fair wage, and that holiday bonuses and time with family should not be calculated into my monthly or annual budget. Imagine what life could be like if you did not have to hope for charity and unexpected kindness, and then imagine that being every day." Beautifully said, because it's so true.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, as a person who has worked the majority of my working life in the service industry, retail sales, you know, restaurant server, I was a massage therapist for over 10 years, this quote means a lot to me. And, you know, giving bonuses to workers each holiday season confirms that the capitalistic society that we live in just wants us to spend those bonuses on useless crap to boost sales, to boost Wall Street, basically.
Yeah, totally.
And, you know, they don't want you to spend it on, like, I don't know, healthcare or credit card debt or paying off your student loan. You know, spend it on useless crap that's just going to boost the 1%.
Yeah. I mean, well, certainly a lot of people wish that they could complain about how much they spend on healthcare. But unfortunately, there's like millions of people that don't even have it, myself included, you know. Preventative healthcare. It's a good replacement, you know. Don't wait till you get sick. Eat right. Try to stay active.
Yeah.
But no, yeah, our healthcare system here sucks. And, you know, it's only countered by a propaganda machine that's basically just trying to tell you that you can't have things that should be human rights. I mean,
for sure.
It's not even something that most of the country like disagrees with. Like 70% of the country, I think, at least 70% thinks that that affordable healthcare or government-funded healthcare would be a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
The debate is on whether or not we can afford to do that through, like, you know, increasing taxes or whatever the program may be. Which quite we can. Like, it's, of course we can. We can spend $16 trillion developing a jet that never sees combat. For God's sakes. Like, I mean, I was looking at this morning. Is it time to throw some numbers in?
Are we at
numbers time?
Do it. Numbers time. I feel like I should have like a numbers time, like jingle. Numbers time, numbers time.
That might be fun.
Yeah.
So the estimated cost to have, free healthcare basically for the country is somewhere around $30 million annually.
Okay. Which honestly doesn't sound like that much.
$30 billion?
Oh, I thought you said million.
No.
Yes, that is quite a bit of money. Yes.
So it would be about $30 billion annually. But oddly enough, do you know how much money we're going to spend as consumers this holiday season?
Oh my gosh, tell me.
It's $30
billion. Oh, shit.
Oh, snap. Crazy. We could never afford that shit every year, even though we do it every Christmas. So then free tuition for everybody across the country. You know how much that would cost?
Tell me.
That would be about $70
billion. Okay.
So all said and done, you know, we got about $100 billion there. And then free housing. Free housing is typically the expensive one here. Free housing for everybody, somewhere around the neighborhood of like $4 trillion, something like that. Actually, I might have had, out of those three groups, I might have flopped those around.
Oh, Jesus. Why do I have you
on
here? Oh, my God.
Maybe it's, I think it might have been the $4 trillion that was for healthcare.
Okay.
And then housing was $30 billion, and tuition was $70 billion. Yeah, so
still very large amounts of dollars. Yeah,
sure, it is. It's you know, $4.2 trillion, somewhere in that neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
But the top 1%, you know, they roughly, or the top 10%. I'm sorry. Roughly brings in $14.25 trillion a year.
Shitload of money.
So they bring in three times that amount.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't done the math on like designing my own specific tax bracket. But just taxing the top 10% literally could actually pay for all of that stuff, and they would still be billionaires. I mean, literally, they would still be allowed to be billionaires in those cases. Now, the top 10% is not mostly made up of billionaires. It is the average net worth is $1.5 million, right? But we're also talking about, I think it's like 15 million people.
Okay.
So we're talking about $14.2 trillion consolidated in 15 million people, right? Like, that's actually really, really crazy.
Yeah. It's a lot. It's a lot more people than I thought. 15 million people? Yeah.
Yeah. And if you tax, like, one of the criticisms here is that if you tax the ultra wealthy, then you're going to be like singling out individual job creators that are going to, you know, move their business to another country or some shit like that.
Mm.
The truth is that the top 10%, $1.5 million of net worth, including assets like your home and all that kind of stuff, is really not a tremendous amount of money. And it is actually a lot more people than you would think.
Mm-hmm.
So that the strain of the increased taxes, that burden wouldn't be felt by a handful of people. It would be felt by 15 million people that, quite frankly, you can handle it.
Yeah, you know? it's not a burden for them.
And I was having a conversation with my dad about this. I think it was a couple of Christmases ago, or maybe it was Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he said, well, you know, if you made that much money, I think you'd want to protect it as much as you could, you know, for future generations and blah, 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 blah. And I said, well, you know, quite frankly, I can't answer that. I'm not really sure how I would change if I had that much money, but I would like to believe that I would still be able to live on $70,000 a year comfortably. And,
yeah.
I wouldn't protect it in that way. As a matter of fact, I think I would probably invest it in social causes. And, you know, like I said, this is a few years ago before I was even more politically active than I am now. I still got the sense that that's just not how you should be doing things. Thinking in a miserly sort of way, where the best thing I can do for my kids is be greedy.
Oh, right. Okay.
So,
I understand. Gotcha.
So you're being selfless in a very selfish way, which is such a capitalistic idea. It's the same bullshit that Bill Gates is trying to say by the way that we fix poverty is by entrepreneurs being more innovative and getting more power. And how do you get more power and be more innovative? It's by accumulating resources and wealth, right? So it's the same bullshit where we can't just restructure society so that everybody gets a fair shake.
Mm-hmm.
We have to rely on the most powerful people having, you know, kindness, right? I'm trying to think of how to explain this in a way where I'm not using metaphors.
What was
right?
that word? What was that word we came up with earlier today? Something.
Oh that? Yeah, Fidelio. Fidelio. Yeah. Pass it off.
Collect your thoughts.
So it's like faith-based reasoning versus evidence-based reasoning, right? And if you go looking for something and you find it, then you're looking for evidence of something,
sure.
Right? That's not the scientific method. What you do is you look around, you make observations, and then you look for patterns within those things that you observe. You mm-hmm. test it, you see if it can be repeated, and then eventually you start to draw some conclusions, right? This is why people thought dinosaur bones were dragon bones in the Middle Ages, right? it's of course it makes sense to them.
Well, and also, why wasn't it dragon bones? I want some dragon bones, man. Why can't we just have some dragons?
I mean, have you seen Monty Python where they're talking about the swallow carrying the coconut?
The African swallow, yes.
Yeah, that's why the weight lift and yeah.
Fine. All right.
Wouldn't work.
Those little wings. I get it.
Yeah, they'd have to be some
massive
wings. Unless they're like Game of Thrones style, which I could like, I'm gonna super hate on this. Dude, the ice dragon, its wings were so torn There's no effing way that
No, too many holes. Yeah.
Total bullshit.
It wouldn't even lift off.
It might, but it would like fly in circles. Have you ever seen a parachute that gets a hole in it?
Oh, yeah. It's like.
Yeah.
To the listeners at home, we're both like winding our hands down in a corkscrew position. We'll just have a podcast about Game of Thrones and socialism.
Hey, that I might be into. I'm pretty sure that there's a couple of socialist societies in, or at least extremely egalitarian, like the Band Without Banners, right? They don't have a leader. They don't have a structure. They're a loose-knit organization.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess they're like the Antifa, maybe, of Westeros.
Totally.
They're like Rose City, Westeros.
Oh, I love it.
Well, I kind of collected my thoughts. So, like,
oh yes, please.
I was talking about like faith-based reasoning versus evidence-based reasoning.
Yes.
Like, to me, the debate is between exactly those two things: people that have evidence and they're pretty much saying socialism will work, and even a socialist democracy would objectively be better, if not full-blown socialism. Mm-hmm. And like, we have the numbers and the evidence and most of the scholastic and academic community on our side. As honestly, a lot of wealthy people are starting to get on board with this as well, which is fantastic. But then the other side is people that, for lack of a better term, in other areas of their life, they believe that evidence is not as important as, let's say, posturing or your opinion, mm-hmm. right? So whether it be what they're bringing to the table in the philosophical debate, or whether it's the economic debate with, you know, the trickle-down economics works because we have rich people, right? Right. I mean, it worked. We have a really, really strong economy, most of the world would say. And if you're in the American system, it's possible for you to become a millionaire, they say. Uh-huh. Right? I mean, apparently for 15 million Americans, that actually is the case. Right?
Oh, yeah. They're definitely in the norm as well.
Right. Of course, yes, 15 yes. million is you know, like, probably less than the population of Metro Atlanta or some shit.
Oh, but, yes, I mean, it is, for sure.
But, right. But what I'm saying is, like, if the standard for them for this to be true is that it will work for 15 million people, then you're never going to change their minds, mm-hmm. right? Because in their mind, they have evidence, right? Like, that is their tangible math, is like, one person exists where this worked. Therefore, it works, you know?
Yeah.
It is the exact same people are like, you know, I know one person who tested to be on the autism spectrum and they got a vaccine. So no one should get vaccines, right? It happened to one person. This exists. Therefore, it's this, the way that I see this is really, really like Beavis and Butthead, granular, like it rocks or it sucks. Either you have evidence-based reasoning that dictates the way that you approach the decisions and the policies that you have, mm-hmm. or you have faith-based reasoning. And some people don't know, and that's fine. You can be agnostic on this and just, you know, like, as long as you're aware that you don't really know your own biases.
Yeah.
That kind of awareness is acceptable, but not being aware of your own biases and your own assumptions when you're approaching your day-to-day life, that bleeds into politics. Mm-hmm. Of course it does. It bleeds into the way that people think about, you know, their workers' rights, or how they consider getting time off for the holidays. It all bleeds over. And eventually you get to a point where you don't think you deserve any of it. And if to ask for more is like being a welfare queen or something. It's absolutely ridiculous, but it all kind of stems from the same place where you're not really willing to do the research. You're just going to push talking points and be tribalistic and posture. And because you have an opinion, that's good enough. I mean, I hate to say it, but
it's not enough, though.
It's always the same people, though, right? Yeah. Like, if you think about the people that are always standing in the way of progress, it's always the same people. Mm-hmm. And they never come from a place of like, hey, I did some research and here's what I found. They're like, oh, I just went on OAN and I found out that some anchor said that Hillary Clinton invented AIDS in the 70s. Like, it's fucking nuts.
And it's also, you know, those types of people, like, clearly there's a little bit of conspiracy theory that they're totally fine to read into and believe. And then there's also the thing where they have to change their thought process, basically rewire their brain for new neurons to form, that it's not about them. It's about the whole of poor people, the whole of the working class. Like, you know, they have to take their ego out of it to be able to understand what's at stake. And that's really hard for people to do.
Yeah, I was actually, my wife and I were talking about that this morning, about how I think that the biggest hurdle in getting somebody to kind of, for lack of a better term, convert is, and I don't mean in the religious sense, I just mean to like be, to literally go from a conservative to being a leftist. Sure. I don't want to say liberal because I don't like, I mean, I think that we're too centrist of a country already. But I mean, for somebody to go from like my dad to me, or left of me even, mm-hmm. what would that take? And I think that it would take a whole lot of embarrassment on the person that's shifting to the left. And I'm not sure that needs to change. But I know that it would be a hell of a lot easier if it weren't there.
Yeah.
To have to admit that you've been wrong.
Right.
You know, it's very hard for people to do.
Totally. Yeah, I mean, it is. And it's, you know, it's hard for people to change. It's hard for people to change that mindset. And to be able to grow and change as a person, you know, one would say that's human. But for people who are stuck in the same group of people who have the same mind, same philosophies, you can't, and you don't have another source to get a different opinion. You'll never change and you'll never grow and, you know, be a better person or care about other things besides that one group of thing that you care about. And, you know, I don't know exactly where I'm going with this thought, but, you know, it's just, you know what I mean? Like, and that's kind of the same thing with my parents as well. They've surrounded themselves with like-minded people. They only listen to, you know, very conservative news talk radio. There's no other outlet for them to explore something else. And I think a lot of people kind of get stuck in their own little bubble and don't branch out and talk to different people or different views or different things to create those neurons in their brain. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, I think it makes sense, but I think honestly, it's a little bit more insidious than that, in that I gotta admit, you know, when I hear conservative news, right? It's not as though they don't share the opinions of their opposition, right? As a matter of fact, it's like oftentimes the main talking point, and then they just attack it.
Mm.
Right? So it's not like they're keeping their audience in the dark about programs that we want and things that we're advocating for. They're being very open about it. But they're also saying, we're okay with you hating this, even if it's because you're a racist, or because you think that people that live in low income housing are lesser people,
mm-hmm.
Or people are poor because they're lazy. We're okay with you thinking that. That's the difference, in my opinion. right?
Because no, I definitely agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah. So like, I mean, as I don't like, you know, thinking that my parents are immoral people, because they've always been perfectly moral people in their treatment to me. Mm-hmm. But so what? Like, I'm not more important than anyone else.
Right.
One of the fundamental things that I think makes me and my father, for example, very, very different people is that I don't think that somebody's proximity to me or whether or not they're a relative means that they should matter more in my life. Mm-hmm. That is crazy for a lot of people. I've come to find out that I think some, you know, child that I've never met in a foreign country, that their life is worth as much as my own son's. To me, that just sounds like being a decent person,
yeah,
and being reasonable. But for a lot of people,
that's hard. You know, that's a hard concept for them to wrap their head around.
It is. Or at least in my experience, I don't run into a lot of people that are like, they think that I'm being like a John Lennon idealist and that the beliefs that I have are unsustainable, right? Mm-hmm. But honestly, I'm doing pretty well. I think, you know, my family's happy and, you know, I'm not suffering for believing the things that I believe. I'm suffering mostly because of the system that I happen to be a part of that I don't really want to be a part of, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. You know, like I was saying before, our ego gets in the way, I don't know. I also have this debate with my husband as well. Like, you know, I say for me personally, you know, it feels a lot of just the ego and, no, I can't think of the word I'm trying to think of, but.
Fidelio.
Yay. I'm never going to remember that fucking word.
There's going to be a couple of people that know what I'm talking about there, and they're just going to be like, what is going on with this? Like, why that word?
Well, it's funny because like now I kind of just want to find the little clip that word is in. I don't want to watch the whole goddamn movie. I just want to watch that one little clip and be like, oh, hey, there. Okay. Yeah. There it
yeah.
is. just laugh about it.
I'm sure that I could find a meme for it.
I'll put it at the very end of the podcast. Just a little small clip.
We'll edit it in. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We won't get sued at all for sure.
You could do like the one, what do you call it? It's not a scene. It's, on a film reel. They have one frame.
Oh,
you
splice
in, do the Fight Club, splice in one frame of a dick, just randomly. They don't know that they saw it. They don't know that they saw it, but they saw it.
Yeah, for sure.
Maybe don't do that. I don't know.
Maybe not. Yeah, no. the amount of dick jokes that I did not anticipate happening on today's podcast is quite special. Thank you.
So, Christmas.
Yeah. Christmas and socialism. So, okay. So the last question I have for you to kind of wrap this up, and I don't know, this is probably a giant subject to wrap it up on, but, what is a socialist Christmas and what would that look like for you or to socialists in general?
So a socialist Christmas, I suppose, I was thinking about how weird it would be if Santa Claus was like a real thing, right? Like,
uh-huh.
He magically would have all of the resources and all of the means of labor and production are consolidated within one place, and he distributes it to the population.
Whoa,
so like,
that sounds amazing.
So Santa is like a crazy fascist dictator in some sense. And I was thinking about this and I was like, okay, but hold on a minute. What would the North Pole be like if the elves seized the means of production and had like a workers' revolt?
Holy shit.
I forget the cartoon, like the claymation one.
Rudolph or
it's a Rudolph Christmas. Yeah, and I was like, wait a minute, there was that one elf. There was the one elf that was like totally an outcast and didn't like the system and everything. And I was like, oh man, like there, that actually would be such a funny like thing to do a parody of.
I think we should make this
a Marxist.
Yes, I think we should make this. Like, I'll get some fucking clay. We'll put this shit together. It'll probably take 5 years because, you know, you have to do like a movement a second or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Claymation is difficult.
It's tedious. Hard. But we'll make this, and then we'll get that one elf to form a union, like have a revolt, get a union formed, and we'll show it to the boys and girls of America.
I'm into it, you know. Yeah. But I mean, speaking really about socialist Christmas.
Sure.
You know, I think that there actually originally was a lot of like socialist ideas in some of the traditions that we have. Like Santa, I believe, originally used to give oranges to everybody, and your behavior actually did not matter. It's just like, yo, like here's an orange, right? But like that's something it's so simple, and it's food, right? It's like, it's not fucking Hot Wheels, right? Like you can actually use this to live. And you know, for me, like I guess a socialist Christmas would look pretty cool for everybody. I mean, it would be the kind of thing where the giving season wouldn't be seasonal, right? Mm. It wouldn't be because I'm expected to do this once a year. It would just be the norm.
Yeah.
It would be really odd to do things like buy wrapping paper and treat a gift like a gift, right? I mean, it would just be, I don't know.
It would be different for sure.
It would be a commodities potluck, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and who doesn't like a potluck? You know,
yeah.
I bring a little something to the table. You bring a little bit of something to the table. We all get to share.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen anybody go to a potluck and like they didn't bring like a big dish and then somebody was really pissed off about it? Like, some people aren't going to be able to bring as much, but they're going to bring what they can.
Or maybe they can't bring anything at all, but that's okay because we've got more than enough to go around.
If you show up to the potluck, you're bringing you. That's something.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. Yeah. Totally.
Your company is a commodity just like anything else. I mean, hell, people pay for entertainment. Oh, let's talk about how much athletes make.
Oh. No,
let's not do that.
Oh. Okay.
But no, really. I mean, it's the money's there. And if we're talking about economics being the scarcity of resources and how that drives markets and people's decision-making processes and social behaviors and all that kind of stuff. I mean, if you believe in behavioral economics, which is like the new school version of it, then the things that we consider resources are changing as far as what is considered to be scarce and not. And quite frankly, there's only political opposition that's stopping things like free healthcare, a shorter working week, a bare minimum of $70,000 a year for an income for somebody that's working a full-time position, fucking maternity time off. All of these things are completely affordable, and it's asinine for anybody to suggest that that the way to pay for those things is a unilateral thing. Like, it could come from so many different sources, and in fact, it should come from multiple sources. We could increase taxes. We could reduce our military budget. We could.
Let's also clarify. Increase taxes not on the poor, increase taxes on the billionaire class and millionaire class.
Well, If
you're making like $10,000 a year, I don't tax the shit out of them.
Well, so there wouldn't be a need to.
No.
But realistically, if you get rid of capitalism and you actually do implement more of a traditional Marxist system, there wouldn't be people wouldn't make
$10,000 a year.
I guess what I'm saying is, you know, if you actually follow through and do all that stuff, and you do have a socialist system that is actually socialism,
then everyone can contribute.
Then
and
everybody should be paying the same amount in taxes,
yes.
Even the lowest bracket,
right.
Percentage wise, right?
Right.
But you know, it's one of those things where it's like Ho Chi Minh was pretty famous for saying patriotism first, then revolution, and I just can't get behind that. Like, patriotism, by the way, he didn't mean like love for your country. He meant that North Vietnam was not recognized as a sovereign nation. So he meant like, let's get sovereignty like legitimized first, then we're going to go full blown communism, right? I don't think that that's actually the approach with socialism that we should be doing. And like, I guess the whole part of what you said just made me think of that, where it's like, I guess if you're trying to maintain a capitalist society, then yeah, you definitely should not be taxing the lowest income. Like, for sure you shouldn't. But my goal is never and never will be to maintain a capitalist society. I think the two biggest dangers to the entire world civilization are capitalism, second probably, and faith-based reasoning probably number one. Because if you don't have hate for for illegitimate reasons, prejudice, biases, assumptions, whatever you want to call it, if that goes away, then a lot of the greed and corporate consolidation and, you know, side effects that come with a capitalist society go away as well, because you actually can get, although people are going to act out of self-interest, of course, like that's never going to go away. But getting people to stop acting against their own self-interest to spite another group, that bullshit might stop.
Big ask.
But seriously,
it's a big ask though.
How many people do you know that make like $40,000 a year and they vote Republican because they're like, oh, the Democrats are gonna raise my taxes? I know a shit ton of people like that, where it's like they're gonna vote against their own self-interest because they just want to make sure that the Democrats don't win.
Yeah,
like they don't care that they would be better off with a Democratic politician.
Mm-hmm.
They literally don't give a shit.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that kind of bullshit could stop, but faith-based reasoning has to, like, it has to stop too. Mm-hmm. And I don't see that happening anytime soon. So I don't see a world where you can have an ethical capitalist society. Like,
ethical capitalist.
I don't see that as being a thing as long as there's so many people that think that a belief is as good as evidence.
Right.
I just don't see it happening.
Okay. Yeah.
So boo capitalism. Get rid of all, the whole damn thing needs to go.
Is that what you're saying?
I'm not quite sure.
Okay. Great.
Do you know the guy who, I can't remember his name, but he is the CEO of Gravity Payments, and he's been in the news.
I'm not familiar.
Over the last couple of a few years ago, he basically became a multimillionaire.
Okay.
And his company was tremendously successful, and basically he had one of his you know, regular, like lower level employees, had a heart to heart with him and said that they were going to have to probably move because they couldn't afford this and couldn't afford that. And he was really, I guess he wasn't aware that that people that make less money, he was always pretty well off. So he really didn't know like how poor people were struggling. And he was really touched by this, and he actually gave up. He restructured his contract rather than doing charity. He restructured his contract so that now, including himself, every single person in his company makes $70,000 a year, from the guy that cleans the offices at the end of the night to himself. Everybody makes $70,000 a year.
Well, shit.
Minimum. And what's
the name of the company again?
It's called, I believe it's called Gravity Payments.
Gravity Payments, okay.
He's been doing this for a few years, and he's for sure a comrade. And Dan Price is his name.
Familiar.
If you look him up, like, he's got a Twitter account where he's pretty much constantly railing against capitalist society and Wall Street.
Okay.
But he's a very, very Bernie Sanders-esque version of it. And that's why I think dudes like him are really, really good allies, but also, like, they're important because they represent what I see as a necessary transition. In that we need to have democratic socialism first before socialism, probably.
Yeah.
And the way that he sees corporate structure actually would not be upsetting to most Americans while it actually adopts a lot of socialist philosophies.
Yeah.
He seems like a pretty nice person. The only flaw that he has is that philosophically, I suppose, is that he's not, you know, full blown anti-capitalist, but he kind of is, though. I don't know. He's an interesting cat.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like, you know, it's a little bit like, you know, he wants to reform the system that we're in, which, you know, I'm totally behind.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Reform, just, not revolt. Yeah.
Yeah. I like the whole reform thing because, you know, it would be almost impossible to get rid of capitalism altogether and start a whole new thing, especially with like over 300 million people in this country. So, you know, I don't know. I see both sides, and I think reform to a better system where it helps all instead of just the rich.
There's definitely a difference between a socialist corporate structure and a socialist political structure.
Yeah.
And I don't think that we can get the socialist corporate structure to work like overnight.
I definitely
agree with you on that. The political one, I'm not quite so sure about, because all you would need to do is just make things laws. I mean, like, the only reason why we have the laws that we have is because we agreed upon them. Like, it's...
People don't really, those laws have been ingrained for so long, you know, it's hard to do something different, especially with like, mostly being white men.
Yeah. Well, I was going to interrupt you and be like, yeah, but like women can vote now. Like it's a thing, you know, it's totally a thing. I'll be even more hyperbolic here and be confusing as shit. Dude, we had a black president. There's no more racism.
Oh, my, like, God.
These are big facts.
As we're winding down, where can people find your blog? Obviously, it's on Medium, but do they just look it up by, like, the date where you posted it?
Yeah, okay. I think so. I'm pretty sure you just need to go, what was it? I think it was the one that was posted on either the 10th or the 11th.
It was actually the 9th, John.
The 9th.
Yes. So yeah, everyone please go read his blog. It's very simple, quick, easy read, and it's beautifully written. So yeah, thank you so much, John, for being here. I hope you continue to write more.
Yeah, thanks. I'm gonna write occasionally. I've got another one that it's about a month away. I don't know what it's on yet, but it's probably gonna be something to do with our new president and what policies to be aware of. But we'll see. Yeah, we'll see. Listen here, Jack. You gotta celebrate Festivus.
All right. And to the people of the future, hi! And until next time, bye!
A special thanks to our audio mixologist, Tanner, and our producer at large, Ben. The music for the podcast is by the amazing Bert Peterson. You can find his music at bertpeterson.bandcamp.com or a streaming music platform of your choice. Please email your work horror stories to podcastlaborstories@atldsa.org.